All righty. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Wednesday afternoon. Terry Savage will be here in just a minute or two as we talk about what's going on in personal finance. I think we'll jump overseas for a minute or two as well. Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business a little bit later. And I told Bill and Wendy we're going to talk about what the White Sox are doing with their beer contract at their ballpark. It's sort of unique. Not a lot of other teams doing it. Not sure if they're doing it out of necessity or out of a strategy, but we'll talk to Frank about that as well. Do you want a tote bag with your company logo on it? There's a company called Quality Logo Products, a local company, and we're going to talk to the CEO, Brett Bonnet, about all he does. Now, they were trying to figure out a way to distinguish themselves, and one of the things they looked at was their pricing, not just how much they charge, but the ability to actually figure out how much they charge. He looked at pricing and ways to be a little more upfront and compete with his competitors that way by giving you a little more direct action. So we're going to talk about pricing a little bit with Brett Bonnet later on the Business Lunch. We start with Terry Savage, who joins us most Wednesday afternoons. She's on a phone line today. Terry, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Glad to be here. A lot going on.
Yeah, let's start overseas, I guess. I woke up this morning to news that Theresa May had sent the letter off, the Brexit divorce or the Brexit beginning. I'm not sure how you characterize it, but it is official now. They've begun this, couple of year process to separate themselves from the European Union.
Yeah, this is going to be, you know how messy divorces can be. This one is going very messy because the children are taking sides, by the way, you know, on this, because Scotland, it would be very insulting to call them a child, but they're the piece of the British Empire of the United Kingdom. They have decided that they want to stay. They don't want to be part of Britain anymore, so likely they could stay or get into the European Union. So the kids are taking sides. There's a lot at stake. And either they're going to nitpick all the little things about various trade agreements for everything from dairy to machinery and so forth, and immigration will be a big issue. That's one of the reasons Britain said, hey, we don't want this free immigration. So will they discuss all these little issues, or will they come to a conclusion that it's over, it's over? That could really hit the British economy.
I'm leading a group to Ireland next month, and I've got a group going to Northern Ireland in the summer. I was in Northern Ireland a few years ago, and they're very proud of the progress that they've made there and the integration with the Republic in the South going back and forth. That's something that could really, Northern Ireland could really be hurt in this if all of a sudden the borders go up.
Absolutely, because you'd have to, you know how long it takes to negotiate, Donald Trump notwithstanding, it takes a long time to negotiate trade deals. And in the meantime, there could be tariffs put against various exports of Britain. That's why the British pound is trading at $1.24. I mean, when Britain was at its height of its post-Britannia glory, was actually in the 80s and 90s when they discovered oil in the North Sea. The pound was $2 then. It's been back up there since. It's $1.24 now. That just tells you that the world's a little concerned, more than a little concerned, about what this divorce is going to do to Britain's ability to import and export things that it needs.
Let's stay overseas, but talk Chicago a little bit, too. The Chicago Fed president, Charles Evans, is speaking. I think he was in Frankfurt earlier today about what's going on with the U.S. economy and interest rates coming soon. But he sort of cut Donald Trump's legs out from under him as well, saying the president's estimates of, 4 and 5% GDP just aren't very realistic.
Well, I think that's not an outlier position. I think you could get every economist.
You didn't make news there? No.
It's a long shot to get over 3, 3.5, and that's even a stretch. But what's really interesting is that our own Charlie Evans, who's a really terrific guy, has been viewed as what they call a dove, a guy who didn't want to raise interest rates, wasn't worried about inflation. I mean, we're going back, we've had this discussion together, sitting at a dinner table about 7, 8 years ago. He really didn't worry about the money creation of the post-2007, 2008 crisis. He really wasn't worried about inflation, did not want to raise rates, did not want to stamp out growth. In fact, we haven't had inflation. So he's been unwilling to raise rates, and only in recent months has he started to say, yeah, we could raise rates. So this year, he is one of the five Fed voting members. There are 12 Federal Reserve banks. The president of the New York Bank is always one of the voting members of the Fed Open Market Committee. And four other bank presidents are. And this year, Charlie Evans is a voting member. And for him to go ahead, you know, we got to review the bidding. President Bullard said just in a couple of days, yeah, two rate hikes could be okay. Charlie Evans said today, three, maybe four. Boston Fed President Rosengren said, yeah, we should definitely have four. It's like bidding, two, three, four. I'm waiting until they get to know Trump. Because you can be sure that did that go over everybody's head? No, Trump is the next bid.
I got it.
All right.
Now
sorry,
you explained it.
Funny, but the fact is, they're going to run up against President Trump. If rates move up and it slows the economy and makes higher rates could make the dollar actually stronger because it would be more attractive, they're going to run into some backlash from President Trump about high interest rates. So this issue is not just about your mortgage, your savings account. It's about how we relate to the rest of the world. And it's very interesting now that even the most cautious of bankers, Charlie Evans, is beginning to say, yeah, we could do three, maybe even four, he said.
You wrote a column about Medicare, and I want to get to that in the next segment. But before we go there, there's a fascinating story coming out of New York, actually the Supreme Court today. In New York, there's a law that says a merchant cannot charge more for someone who buys something with a credit card than if they were to buy with cash. Well, you know, the merchants have to spend more. They swipe fee of couple percent to the credit card companies. They wanted to pass that on to the customers. New York says you can't. They sued, went to the Supreme Court, and they argued on free speech rights, which is interesting. I mean, that's why it's going back, but maybe peripheral to my consideration, because it just seems to me that that's how we buy things now. I almost never use cash. I always use a card. I don't use my credit card so much for credit as I do as a mechanism just to purchase. I mean, I pay off every month. It makes sense that these stores should be able to pass that cost on to us. And I just wonder if you think one day they will.
They actually do. The question is whether they can disclose it and say this is an additional fee. Look, here's a little perspective. There are two, Visa Association and MasterCard Association get the right to set swipe fees, and those up until now have not been individually disclosed. We all know that a merchant pays the credit card companies some processing, but with processing costs being minuscule now, there's a lot of money at stake. There's about a 2% to 3% margin, depending on the card. Your card that gives you big rewards back might charge a merchant 3% to process the transaction. None of that is broken out for the individual consumer. Now, a lot of businesses, some businesses have very nice high profit margins. Others, retailers are getting shrunk today. Grocery stores are like, their profit margin is less than 1% for sure. And most on grocery things, it's four hundredths of a percent, five sixth hundredths of a percent. So this 2% margin may be, for some merchants, more even than the profit margin they're making. So the point is, consumers are paying to use credit cards. The merchants want the right, under this free speech argument, to say, you know, you're paying 2% of this. Wait, let's back up. Suppose Illinois added 2% to its sales tax. We'd all be outraged. We pay a high enough sales tax.
Right, right.
2% more? Oh, my goodness. But you are paying 2% more for the goods and services you buy that you charge on your credit card. So the question is, can merchants be outspoken about it? Can they get some backlash against Visa and MasterCard, who dominate this and don't negotiate these fees? So it's a very inside business kind of a story. But the fact of the matter is, consumers pay to use credit cards. Should merchants, they are allowed to offer a discount for cash, you know. And you probably won't get it at a big major retailer. But if you go to some store where you're buying something that costs a lot, you could say, is there a discount for cash? And you might very well get one.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, I'm going to do that at the 7-Eleven.
Yeah, oh, poor 7-Eleven owners. They don't have enough of a margin.
That's Terry Savage. It's 12:24. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is on the phone line, and you can read her columns at terrysavage.com. Now, here's the thing. Terry is a very good writer. She takes complicated ideas, puts them down very clearly in a way that everyone can understand, which is why this Medicare column is so remarkable, because, Terry, it's so confusing. I think my head was spinning even after reading you.
Listen, even after working on this very hard, my head was spinning. So let me give you the headline and tell you this is the top column on the left at terrysavage.com, and I've got a good resource for you there. The headline is 10,000 people every day turn 65. That's the age at which you become eligible for Medicare. And if you don't handle the situation correctly, you could be paying penalties that make your Medicare and or Medicare supplement more costly for the rest of your life.
That's the key, isn't it? It's the supplement, figuring out when.
Not just the supplement. It's when you sign up for Medicare. Now, it used to be that everybody turned 65 and signed up for Medicare. But now we have lots and lots of people still working past age 65.
Right.
So let me just give you a couple of quick bullet points. Number one, the first decision date for Medicare is before you are eligible for Social Security. People forget that. You know, Social Security is now 66 plus, but the first decision date is for Medicare at 65. Now, if you're getting Social Security age 65, you're already enrolled in Medicare, but everybody else has to figure out what to do. If you sign up for Social Security at any point after 65, they give you Medicare Part A, so you might as well take it. The only problem with that, there is one exception. If you are in Medicare Part A, you cannot contribute to a health savings account any longer and deduct it. So remember that, Medicare Part A, you can no longer contribute to a health savings account. If you do, there's big penalties. But it's Part B, the doctor's visits and outpatient services, that's the real issue. And if you're still working, or maybe you're covered by your spouse's health plan and you're not receiving Social Security yet, you have to decide when to sign up for Part B. Some people can skip it. If you or your spouse works for a large company plan when you reach age 65, over 20 employees, whenever you decide to sign up, after you lose your job, or if your spouse loses his job or her job, there's an 8-month special enrollment period. There's no penalties. But if you work for a small business with fewer than 20 employees, they could exclude people from their plans over 65. And even if they let you stay on, you must enroll in Medicare. Okay, it just got way too complex. Read the column. If you are 65 or older and still working, you need to read this column, because this was triggered by someone who came to me and said, I just found out that I'm paying a huge penalty. I won't go through the details. You write to me. You post questions on my blog at terrysavage.com. I research them. I don't know all of this stuff by heart. And this one, I decided, is such a big rock, I wanted to turn it over. And there's a great website, by the way, 65incorporated.com.
Yeah, you know, I'm not there yet, but I had no idea of these things I was reading about. So I'm glad you wrote that. Thank you very much.
You don't know. So terrysavage.com, read the column. If you or anyone you know is turning 65, that is, again, a year at least before Social Security.
All right, Terry Savage, we'll check in again next week, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks,
Steve. Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 1237 on this Wednesday afternoon. All right, Frank Sennett's on phone line, joins us from Crane Chicago Business to talk about some of the stories that they are covering this week. And Frank, I apologize. I said earlier that I was going to have you try every beer available now at the White Sox Park. And, well, I didn't realize it was almost 100. Are you okay?
It's going to take me at least all afternoon.
I was shocked to read that story, that Danny Ecker story. I mean, it's about more important things, but in there he points out that you can get 100 different beers at the ballpark. What a far cry from Bud Light or Old Style.
Yeah, so they had a partnership, the White Sox did, with Miller Brewing. That ended, and they took the proverbial lemons, and they made about 100 beer choices out of it.
Well, and so tell me about that. it's an interesting sort of thing if you enjoy the taste of beer, I guess, because you can go to the park now and they've got Modelo and Founders and Goose Island and a couple of others that are sort of principal sponsors, I guess, in a way, but they don't have the big fat beer contract. Is that by design, or are they, like you said, trying to make the best of a bad situation?
Yeah, I think that that was what they decided to do. One of the deals they have is with Goose Island, which is a subsidiary of Anheuser-Busch InBev. So, you know, they've got some bigger players kind of peeking in through the door, but they also made a deal with an independent player, Pabst Brewing, and two breweries in Western Michigan, including Bell's Brewery in Kalamazoo and Founders, as you mentioned, of Grand Rapids. So they're really trying to appeal to, you know, the beer heads out there, and they're going to have a beer cave in Wright Field. And, you know, given the product that we may see on the field as one Cubs fan to another, maybe time to hang out in that beer cave.
We didn't mention Modelo either, right, which was the one that led the way a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Modelo Especial, the team's new official imported beer. And so they've got all sorts of, you know, and if they got Modelo Dark, I'm there. I like that stuff.
Yeah, I'm there too. Well, no, I'm not there. I'm going to need more than a beer to get me there, I think. And but wait, that brings me to a quote from Marketing Chief Brooks Boyer in Danny's story. He said, he paraphrased, many of the beers offered at the ballpark this season have loyal followings who will want to support their favorite brands. So they seem to be thinking that the beer fans actually will go to the park to have their favorite beers. I just don't see that happening. Do you?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that it'll be a value add for when you're looking for a great day at the ballpark. You know, it doesn't necessarily matter who the opposing team is, doesn't matter what the record is. And if you can add enough of those experiential things, you know, you got the little kids area, you've got some fireworks at the end of the game, that kind of thing, that could put you over the hump and sell some more tickets. But I think beer alone, as they say, man does not live by bread alone. You probably don't sell tickets by beer alone.
And, okay, if they had their wish, would they rather have a big principal beer sponsor or these sort of five secondary ones? I mean, best case would have been the big one, right?
Well, you think in terms of the dollar value and the marketing dollars coming in, that's probably the case. But as you mentioned, Boyer's quoted extensively in this story, and he said, most teams are less is more. We're looking at can more be more? So, you know, this may be a path for them. They can cobble together. The money makes sense and make some fans happy. It's a win for them.
And there aren't many other teams doing this, right? I mean, most teams are still going for the big contract.
That's right.
There's very few
that are going the potpourri route.
But, you know, the idea of a beer at the ballpark, the beers that they sell you at the ballpark have never really tasted that good. They're in wax cups. They're probably warm. They don't last very good or very long. So, you know, if they're going to offer a quality beer or a better beer, I'm all for that. Why not?
Yeah, I agree. And I really enjoy the fact that when you go to Wrigley, they've got the Goose Island 312 Urban Wheat that they bring right. You know, they're selling at the seats. I enjoy that beer. And so, yeah, the upgraded beer experience makes the ballpark a little more enjoyable, for sure.
All right, so go out and cheer on your White Sox and have a Modelo Negro when you're there.
That's right.
And then you can complain about people's gas and the price of your natural gas bill in the city of Chicago. Tell me about this story. They are upgrading, right, a lot of their old piping, their pipelines and things like that. But the Citizens Utility Board and others say they're spending too much money. How can that be?
Yeah, so the state regulators ordered a new investigation into why Peoples Gas Main Replacement Project was so expensive. And about a month later, they have decided to boost spending on it by more than 50%. They have budgeted up to $300 million annually for this year and next year in both years for the system modernization program. And that compares with just $190 million spent last year. And it will be the most that the gas company spent on the program since its inception in 2011. So it's under fire. Consumer advocates say costs are wildly out of control, and it's raising heating costs to unaffordable levels for many Chicagoans. Peoples, is meanwhile saying that they cost a lot to replace 2,000 miles of gas.
We'd be angrier if the price of natural gas wasn't so low right now. It's going to go up.
That's the cushion right now, right? Because, yeah, natural gas has dropped through the floor because of the oil boom with fracking, et cetera.
And so if the, you're right, if we were like 6 or 7 years ago when natural gas prices were high, we would all really be feeling the pinch in the city. So, you know, hopefully they'll get this done soon, because if the gas prices do go up, on top of that, with the charges for the main replacement, we're going to be hurting.
All right. You know, Governor Rauner was on with Steve Cochran earlier today, essentially calling Mayor Emanuel a lackey for House Speaker Madigan. The mayor is going to be on with John Williams coming up just after 1:30 this afternoon. So I hope John will ask him the lackey question. But and a lot of that comes out of this week, the arguing over selling, I still call it the State of Illinois Center, but selling the Thompson Center, right? I mean, Madigan says one thing, Rauner says another. Jim Durkin says, hey, I wrote a good bill. Let's just all get along and pass this. What's going on there?
Well, you know, we're not talking about John Lackey, the pitcher for the Cubs.
No, we are not.
I'm hoping he, all right. So we'll move on. So the Thompson Center is on the dock for a redevelopment project. The city is willing to sell it. However, the state law that is currently operative doesn't deal with issues related to the easement on the CTA station underneath, as well as zoning matters. They want to build a much taller building, developers may, than is currently allowed on the site. So Madigan is holding up the bill and saying, look, let's fix these negotiation points before we pass it. And meanwhile, Rauner wants to generate $220 million for the state from the sale to fill a big budget hole. So this is a pain point for him. And he's saying, look, we can negotiate all of those details on the easement for the CTA and on the height of the building without, you know, any issues. You can pass the state law and we can do that afterwards. And Madigan's saying, yeah, no thanks.
I mean, come on, just sell the building. It's never been that great of a building. Everyone knows the city can use the revenue. This seems to be the sort of thing. This is one of those things that if you can't agree on this, you're just being disagreeable, I think, right? I mean, we can disagree on substantive issues, but this is one kind of big picture. We all see the same thing.
Yeah, and the city hall stance has been one of, you know, remaining mum, letting these guys fight it out. So I think to your point, they're saying, you know, shaking their heads. We'll hear from the mayor later today, it sounds like, on WGN, saying, come on, guys, let's work it out. There does seem to be a deal here, as long as reasonable minds would get together.
Yeah, Mayor Emanuel and John Williams are on 1:30, always interesting, but never as interesting as when Frank Sennett is on the Business Lunch.
I'll be hanging out with John Lackey, drinking some Modelo Negro.
So. All right, so you're on what, 99 beer, bottles of beer on the wall? Keep working on that, will you? We'll talk to you again next week. Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 1252 on this Wednesday afternoon. All right, Brett Bonnet is in the studio. He's the president and CEO of Quality Logo Products, and he wants to put your name on stuff. Brett, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So tell me, so you're the guy, right, who when I see a magnet business card or a drawstring bag or things like that with company logos, if with any luck, they went to you to get those.
Yeah, hopefully. There's actually 30,000 different people in the same position or do the same thing as us, but we've managed to grow quite a lot.
We're focused on you right now.
Oh, sure. I can't take credit for all the logo products out there,
though. It's a $2.9 billion industry. Is that what I mean?
$22.9
billion. $22.9 billion.
Yeah. And we're 40 million of it. So for being a distributor, we're top 50. You know, we started in 2003 out of North Central College in Naperville, Illinois.
Yeah.
And 108 employees. And it's been a lot of fun since.
What do you mean you started out of North Central? You were a college kid and picked it up there?
I've actually been in this industry my entire life. Since I was 16, I've been working in the space. It's kind of a long story. I got into it, but I've been doing it forever. It's in my DNA. Met my business partner in college, got a grant from the Coleman Foundation, and we use that to start the company up.
I like that because, you know, we talk so much about tech startups in college, you know, and all of the, you know, Booth and all of these mm-hmm. things. But yours is more of a traditional business that you got a leg up by working through a school.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hybrid. I mean, we operate entirely online in terms of our storefront, but it's still a lot of people perspective to it. I mean, you can't really automate the process of custom products. But yeah, started at college. And in fact, I think almost 25% or 30% of our staff are actually North Central College alums.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's a great school.
And so I would imagine as a business, it's taken off in the past 10 or 15 years just because it seems like it would be easier to produce stuff.
I want to say it's easier to produce stuff, but it's definitely a growing industry. It seems, especially in this day and age where everything's digital, there's the need to have tangible marketing materials, and there's only so many banner ads or search ads you can buy.
Right.
And promotional products have the lowest cost per impression of any marketing medium, and they're fun. There's something about validation of your success when you see, you know, your WGN logo on a tumbler or a pen.
Well, you know, it's a good point you brought up, because I guess it might be, I use the word easier to produce, but it's also the fact that you've got more competition because so many people are just limiting their stuff to online.
True. I mean, the whole industry is going that way. It used to be a lot of mom and pop shops, very digital based now. All the top companies in this industry are primarily online based,
right.
Digital delivery method. And it's the competition is tough, especially since we're privately funded. We've never really taken a kind of debt, and we're dealing against companies that have got, you know, $250,000,
right.
Rounds of funding in them.
Okay, so I'm after an audience with dry lips. Could you put my name on lip balm and hand it out?
Absolutely, yeah.
Really? What's the weirdest thing you put your logo?
You really want me to answer that in the air?
With the air in mind.
Sure, yeah. No, we've done like urinal biscuits or those, like, you know, things that, you know, gentlemen, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I want, I could think of a couple people's names I'd want in those. Can I order only two?
I can't order two. We do primarily deal with bulk, but we do kind of specialize in the small quantity niche of things. So, you know, there are some items that you could probably get a couple hundred of, or maybe, you know, 48 of, and still be out the door for less than $100.
Okay. And so here we talked about this $22.9 billion industry, right? And you're competing. You're in the top 50.
Yes, sir.
And you're trying to figure out a way to differentiate yourself from these others. And you decided maybe pricing was the way to do that. Not just lower pricing, but sort of transparent pricing.
So usually when you do custom anything, you know, a custom add-on to your car or a custom home, there's always a bunch of gotchas and things like that. And it's the same thing in our space. We try to really look at the way the business has been done, and it's been primarily like a mom-and-pop, very analog-based business. And we wanted to make the process for customers to order promotional products as stress-free as possible and have no anxiety. We did some independent research, and we discovered that out of those top 50 distributors, that only 12% actually gave you a total price. That's after you paid. That's after you've logged in, created an account, and they still had disclaimers that this pricing might change.
Right.
So what we did is we came up and we built the technology to have the highest level of confidence in the price and the delivery date that we displayed online that we could stand behind it. So, for example, you might see a total of $100 on a competitor's website. But when you actually get your final invoice, we had discovered that on average it increases about 40%.
Right. I mean, because you check out and then they say, how about this? Or then you want to do this? Or how do you want to do
this?
Well,
it's not even like upsells. It's not like, do you want fries with that? It's literally like, oh, we didn't take the time to do our homework to make sure that the price we presented to you was accurate. And so now we're going to bill you $40 in the tail end of
this. You talked about being privately funded, right? You invested in this. This took some cash.
Oh, yeah. I took cash and time, about 4 years of development. The biggest challenge is the data you need to come up with these accurate estimates, whether it be packaging data for shipping, logistics, transit times, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we guarantee and stand behind the price and the delivery date, and no one does.
Has it paid off?
Yeah, it's only been live for a little bit less than 30 days. We went live on March 5th with this new technology, and it's gone up in 300% increase in sales. We're looking to staff additional 18 to 22 people
as
possible. And we've actually had to turn off all our advertising and marketing because we're just, unfortunately, unable to handle the current existing load.
Well, you're going to be blown away now after being on the Business Lunch. Let me tell you right now.
Oh, I'm excited. Yeah. And if you're looking, you know, for a new job, too, go to the website and apply, because we need good bodies.
QualityLogoProducts.com, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Brett Bonnet, the president and CEO, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having us.
I'll look for those urinal cakes.
I'll put your name on it.
Not mine. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.